Welcome to the January 20th edition of the PFF Forecast. This is a fantastic episode. It is championship week. We have Aaron Nagler, or Nags as Aaron Rodgers calls him, on the podcast today to break down the Packers and that Bucks matchup. It's fantastic. We're going to talk a little Bills Chiefs, pick a lock of the week. Let's rock. All right, buddy. It is a big week for you. How are you feeling? Let me get a temperature check.
I'm nervous, man. Yeah. I haven't been nervous for a Kansas City game until there was about 7 minutes left in the third quarter the other day.
I want to rehash the Super Bowl just a little bit for the people that are listening. We're sitting next to each other. My team is up 10. Your team is down 10.
My phone fell into the seat in front of me.
You're a mess.
I'm a mess.
And it's halftime.
Probably sat like this for 15 straight minutes in the fourth quarter.
It's halftime. I ask you if you want like a beer or a drink. Nope, doesn't move. I don't know how. I had to pee. I come back. You're still sitting in the exact same position. Third quarter starts and I look over and you're just sitting there and your leg is shaking. and that's basically how it was until the end of the game. And at that point it was, I couldn't even get words through to you because you were so excited. So I expect that same kind of level of nerves. The difference is Mahomes was perfectly healthy then, right? When you were down 10 to the Niners. He's not perfectly healthy now. Some of the there's been stuff written about Mahomes, whether he had or didn't have a concussion. I talked to Mario Plato about this last night, and he was pretty steadfast in if you're trying to say that it's not a concussion, you're like, you're going too deep. Like, it is probably a concussion, and he's in the concussion protocol, and yes, he's passing the steps, but there's no guarantee. You can't grit out a concussion.
Tyrann Mathieu, by the way, trolling everybody. 57 minutes ago, tweeted out the red upset face.
Did the line move?
No, that's okay. What I'm saying. So like, and then Mackenzie Nelson, blue check mark. Patrick Mahomes is on the field and taking snaps. So
it's a good start.
Well, it's -3, -103 on Pinnacle.
Total of
54. So again, this is an indicator again that we're probably going to see Mahomes play, because this thing went down to 53.5, 53. Now we're at 54. Actually, I think we would still, given Mahomes' condition, we probably still would like over there. I think this is going to be a great football game. And I think, and I said this on Petro's show, I've said this all week, I think the Bills are a tough out for Kansas City if Kansas City is at full strength. Kansas City might not be with Mahomes. Rashad Breeland is in the concussion protocol. Rashad Fenton has a foot injury. Willie Gay has a foot injury. So we have to make – I mean, honestly, whereas, you know, other than, you know, Zach Moss and Cody Ford, like, they're pretty healthy in Buffalo. You know, John Brown came back the other day and played, a pretty good game for him. Chiefs do limit wide receiver effectiveness, which is a Buffalo trait. This game is so...
Could you make the claim that the difference, and I would recommend everyone go check out, so Richard Sherman broke down, and he's obviously played both these teams, broke down this game really well on the podcast with Chris, and you'll be interested to hear who he picks to win this game. But the difference between Allen and Mahomes at full strength is how much?
3.5 points.
You think it's that many?
Yeah.
Is that, and that's obviously not just play this year. That is knowing what Mahomes has done for 2 years, the fact that in the biggest situations, this guy shows up better than anyone else. Yeah. And we just haven't seen it from Allen. Yeah.
The difference between Rodgers and Mahomes right now is about a scratch. Mm-hmm. Brady's probably 2 points worse, 2.5 points worse than Rodgers and Mahomes. And I would say Allen's about 3.5 points worse than both. So
So you're kind of saying, okay, maybe we get 90%, 80% of Mahomes. That's a 3-point difference.
And I think the rest, unfortunately, for so this is where I've loved Buffalo all year as far as I think they're really well coached. I think they're really well put together. Mm-hmm. They make good decisions, et cetera. How much of that is untrue about the Chiefs? None of it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And last week, none of it was untrue about Baltimore except for one thing, and that was the quarterback position. Like, you know, Lamar can play. And noise, right? Like, if Lamar throws a touchdown instead of a pick six on that yep. play, the game's tied.
Yep.
So that game was a little bit more noisy. This is a hot take, and I think it's, you know, I could be a homer for this. If you take away priors, Allen is a lot closer to Mahomes than I think many people believe. If you take away priors, though, Kansas City's defense this year has been, I think, just as good, if not better, than Buffalo's.
Yeah, but those things, they're both... defense we know to be yeah. you know, far less sticky. I think there's a lot of reason to believe that Allen, if you take away the end of game beliefs that you have about Mahomes, is right there in terms of the way he's played this year. Certainly, I mean, their PFF grade is separated by, like, you know, 0.5 points.
Yeah.
You know, their big time throw turner worthy play ratio is super
similar. I'm firmly of the belief that this is not the best bet in the world. Kansas City's not the best bet in the world, even if Mahomes plays. If you have Kansas City futures, I think you if and this game's sitting on three, I think now it's probably going to move to Kansas City's direction. I could be wrong, you know, but it was always value in picking up some Buffalo when there was uncertainty about Mahomes, mm-hmm. especially if you had Kansas City futures. Now, I think the best bet in this game might be over. Weather might be an issue, although let's make sure.
I don't think so. Unless things have changed,
people think so. It's 45, 10-mile-per-hour winds, precipitation 40%. So it's not the best yeah. weather, but it's not going to be very cold.
Well, in that game that they played earlier this season, weather was an issue.
Yeah, and the game landed at 43.
And the last game that Buffalo played in, weather was an issue. And we saw Josh Allen overthrow Diggs in that game, and I wonder if that plays into this a little bit.
I just think, from my perspective, I don't know. I just think there's way too much uncertainty in this game to go to pick this game as the lock of the week. I've already said, and I've already taken this game. I've already, to me, even though you're paying up for it, you know, and in fact, on Pinnacle, if you lay 3.5, you get +109, which is quite good. But if you lay 3, you're probably in that 120 range. Green Bay minus the points here is the best bet of the weekend.
I'm trying to talk about the Bills-Chiefs here for a second.
Yeah, but the Bills-Chiefs from a betting perspective is clouded by so many things.
Yeah.
Like, the only way to handicap Bills-Chiefs is to say, look, 3 in the NFL is worth anywhere between 7 and 10%. As long as there's still, like, Mahomes could hit his head on like the ceiling and be out on Sunday. Like, it's 100% true. Like,
hit his head on the ceiling.
Yeah,
we've reached the peak.
But the thing about Mahomes is the Chiefs do not get to decide if he plays.
I agree.
And that's there obvious, is still yeah. a non-zero chance that he doesn't play. And even if he does play, the Bills are a solid side here, even though I think our numbers would shade Kansas City a little bit, given priors and all that stuff. The 3 in the NFL is extremely valuable, and if you have any Chiefs exposure, which I think most people do because they were a value early in the season for a ton of reasons, the Bills +3 was really the only thing that I was confident about as a hedge to other bets.
Sure.
I think everything else associated with this game is less of – I have less of a read on it, and I throw it, you know, throw it to you on this Tampa Bay, Green Bay, a former NFC Central rivalry.
All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 into their account while using the promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. I cannot emphasize this enough. It is a great deal. $20, you get to play all the DFS and props games at Monkey Knife Fight. They're super fun, NBA, NFL, the whole deal. And you get a $40 PFF subscription that gets you the draft guide, all our premium content. So go to monkeyknifefight.com, use promo code PFF, deposit $20, get a free Edge annual subscription, and a ton of fun for the rest of the sporting season. The return that everyone's been waiting for, that isn't thinking about the Packers to the Super Bowl is the UFC's most notorious human being, that is Conor McGregor, this Saturday, UFC 257, and with promo code PFF on the DraftKings Sportsbook app, the official sportsbook betting partner of the UFC, you can get a 257-1 odds on McGregor to win. You just bet $1, and then you can win 257, and that's on Saturday night, which means Sunday will be one hell of a day for you. You'll have all that money to roll into those championship games. So promo code PFF when you deposit with the DraftKings Sportsbook app and get yourself a weekend that you will not soon forget. So go download that now. Use promo code PFF. It's only for a limited time. You only got a few days, so make it happen. You must be 21 or older. New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania are the only places. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. If you do not yet have an Edge or an Elite subscription to PFF.com, now is the time, because the Super Bowl is coming around. The props will be plentiful. The PFF props tool is maybe the greatest thing that has ever been created. I have not gotten through the last year without it. Could not have. So go to PFF.com, get either an Edge or an Elite subscription. The props tool comes with an Elite, but Edge still gets you the draft guide, which is awesome as well. Plenty of good stuff there for you to read and use. And if you want something free, Chris Collinsworth podcast is free. Richard Sherman's there every week. They had Devontae Adams a couple weeks ago. Go check that out. And this week, Richard has some really interesting things to say about Deshaun Watson, about Eric Bieniemy, and breaking down these two championship games. So go check it out at pff.com and anywhere else that you download your podcast. So right now you can find Green Bay -3, which I bet earlier and I love. If you can find that, I think that is a given. The difference in Green Bay from a coaching perspective, from a home field advantage perspective, with weather being in the forecast, all things that I think add to the handicap a little bit, in particular, what is Bruce Arians' desire to run the ball. And I feel as though if he didn't realize that throwing the ball was the smart thing to do after seeing what his team did post bye and decided to run the hell out of the ball against the Saints, that he probably is going to do that in inclement weather in Green Bay. So I'm with you there. Let me give you another option, though. What about over 51?
Yeah, I don't mind over 51 here. It goes against everything you think about Bruce Arians, though.
But yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't have a lot of faith in Bruce Arians orchestrating an offense that gets the lead in this game. And I think that forces them then to throw the ball. And Tom Brady says, look, motherfucker, I'm not going to go down handing the ball off to Leonard Fournette in the snow. That's just not how I'm going out. And that's what kind of worries me about Tampa Bay, is that if Brady is the second highest graded quarterback this season, right behind Aaron Rodgers, for a reason. So if they're playing catch up, they're a more efficient offense. I still like the three. But I also think the 51, seeing how Green Bay's played in the snow too, like, there is such a well-oiled machine.
We talk about this with Aaron, though. We're unsure of how they play when they're behind.
True.
So if they get behind, it could be a similar situation as last game against Tampa, where the game ends like 31-10 or something, and we just never get to the number. That's why I think you take...
So you like the three better?
I like the three better.
Okay. I can get on board with that. Green Bay -3? This is a big swing from last year.
But they've earned it.
That's
and we'll talk about this with Nagler in a second.
They've earned it. Okay, so we're going Green Bay -3. I personally love the over. I'm going to convince you over the course of the next couple of days. Maybe you want to hop on board with me. I'm just saying. We're going to get to Aaron Nagler here. A couple of things. We will have a live show on Sunday before the games occur. You can check out the PFF YouTube to watch that. Obviously, we'll have times and stuff on Twitter, and you'll be able to see that. And you and I will be doing the PFF Daily Betting Podcast to talk about lines if they move on Saturday night. So you'll check out both of those. Be a good time. Let's get to our friend Nags, as Aaron Rodgers calls him, Aaron Nagler. We have been waiting all year, literally all year,
Luckily, the Rams were no Matt, because we had worried about last week, right? Where I was kind of like,
no,
what if they lose?
Not worried about last week. We were worried, honestly. I was most worried at the beginning of the season that we wouldn't have a chance to bring our dear friend Aaron Nagler back on. We were patient. We waited for the playoffs. We said, when is the perfect time? Brady Rodgers is the perfect time. Aaron, it's great to see your face again, buddy.
Great to see you guys. I hope you're well. I hope you're enjoying this playoff atmosphere that we find ourselves in. Only a handful of games left in the season. That's always a sobering thought. But hey, the Packers, game away from the Super Bowl.
You must living the life. You must be just waking up every morning and stepping off your bed onto cloud nine.
It's pretty great. I got to admit, I ain't going to lie. I ain't going to tell tales here. I absolutely love it. It's something I tell people, my viewers and the readers at Cheesehead TV, man, you got to soak this up. I remember needing a playoff, a strike-shortened season for the Packers to make the playoffs when I was a kid. So the fact that they are not only in the playoffs, the number one seed and a game away from the big dance, yeah.
All of these teams, by the way, the Chiefs, Packers, Bills, and Bucks have all had these like extended streaks of being awful franchises.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You know, Tampa obviously like is very extended. They won a Super Bowl at least, but like,
right.
You know, the Bills had this streak from what, 96 till now without winning a playoff game. Obviously,
crazy.
Packers were, but the after Lombardi, it was mostly like crap until
93
Holmgren.
I mean, it took Ron Wolf coming on board and trading for Favre, hiring Holmgren, right. Trading for Favre. That started it all.
Kansas
now
City.
They've been good. But yeah, they had, like I said, growing up, I was born in 73, and until 93, all I knew was losing.
Yeah.
So
and
yeah, it's well,
I'm
it's
happy
been a long
for
time.
For both you guys. Whenever someone goes on a long dry streak and, you know, things turn around, I'm always happy for them. I don't know that personally, but I'm happy for both of you. My season, my playoffs, Aaron, Jesus. Have been better. In large part because the Seahawks never had an opportunity to play the Packers, and I never had a chance. I was never calling.
I was pulling for it, dude. I was so pulling for it.
I was never in a place, though. Though, with this Seahawks team, there was zero chance. And with this Packers team, there was zero chance that we got in to the same problem that we did last year, which is...
And there would be zero chance we'd be on the Seahawks side.
Right, no chance.
The Packers...
Well, but here's what I want to start with. And okay. This is key, okay? So, Aaron, right. We talked this offseason. Because, look, I wasn't going to let you... I love you. Wasn't going to let you come on here and not give the people what they want. We have to do that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But we talked this offseason about the 2019 Packers. They were 13-3. The 2020 Packers were 13-3. You came on this podcast and told us that the record is the record, and that tells you how good the team is. Were those two teams equally good?
No, this is a better team.
Why?
Much more efficient on the offensive side of the ball. Didn't stub their toe as much. And the defense is playing at a much higher level here down the stretch. They certainly were better, I think, throughout the 2019 season in regards to, and I'm talking about the defense, in regards to play in the red zone, which is a big reason why they won a lot of those close games. You know, you always talk about, oh, the close games, the ball bounces one way or the other, regression to the mean and all that. I mean, a big reason they won those games last year is because of their play in the red zone. Fast forward to 2020, this team did not look good. The defense really fell off in the red zone, and that had me worried. I got to admit, first part of the season, I was like, wait a second, hold up. That was like one of the few bright spots on defense. But I tell you what, the way they have turned things around on the defensive side of the ball, the way they are playing as a cohesive unit, is I think overall at a much higher level than it was at any point.
Well, so you could say
those
could
things
say,
I think are what make this 2020 team a better version
perhaps
than what we saw in 2019.
You could say that the 13-3 team from last year,
not even close. I know where you're going.
Was perhaps fraudulent in the sense they should not have won 13 games.
But no, well, you can't use that word. Can't
and
say should.
This team,
can't say should. They
and
did.
This team
should would could man. They did.
This team. 13-3, a better team. Maybe you could make the case even better than a 13-win team. I think this Packers team.
I was going to say, you know,
awesome.
Who knows? You know, MVS doesn't fumble in Indy.
Right.
Maybe they're 14-2.
But isn't the biggest difference Rodgers? I mean, Eric, what if you had to point to one thing, you're starting with Rodgers. It has been a turnaround from pretty good top 10 quarterback play, but not anywhere near Rodgers' highest point, to maybe even exceeding that highest point.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's getting rid of the ball 2/10 of a second faster this year. He's playing on script. But I don't want to underscore everything else. LaFleur is a top four play caller in the NFL per our metrics. He has, I thought, gotten a lot. Like, look, they use all four downs more than they used to. I think their run pass ratio is very good. They're not running the ball too much, despite the fact that I think we'll all agree that, you know, wide receiver is a very concentrated group for them on one really good player, an elite player. But also, you look at the defense. Adrian Amos is the most valuable safety in the NFL. Jair Alexander is the most valuable. Most valuable defensive player in all of football going into the playoffs. And then last week, he allowed -3 yards into his coverage.
I love it.
You have an offensive line that without Bakhtiari, but is a very solid group. Corey Lindsey, the best.
And their scheme is great.
Center in the NFL. And then you look at guys that they drafted last season in Savage and Rashawn Gary, really adding. And when you look at how, you know, when we project things, regression always happens. Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith have not had the seasons that they had in 2019, but you get Rashawn Gary, a first-round pick from last year, playing extremely well.
Coverage improves.
Kenny Clark coming back and being pretty good. They're a more robust team than I think we gave them credit for going into the season.
Aaron,
I don't think there's any question when you talk about, you know, all the supporting pieces. Kind of, I think I would agree with most everything you said there. I think Z has rounded it into shape, maybe not quite at the level we saw last year, but you're spot on about Preston as far as, you know, obviously not rising to the level we saw in 2019. But yeah, I think the initial point is the correct one. I mean, if you want to point to one thing that makes this team better, it's Aaron Rodgers and his play. And it's funny because I think he's still physically the same quarterback we saw last year. He is playing much more within structure. And you talk about the play calling, I know you guys know this, but you have to remember that Aaron Rodgers is a large component of that.
Right.
It's not just LaFleur calling the play.
100%.
It's Rodgers cutting into the line of scrimmage and seeing whatever looks the defense is in and getting them into an advantageous call. So I do think they're working better together, more in concert. And we've heard a lot from Rodgers this year and LaFleur about what they did this offseason in regards to stripping stuff away from the offense that they just didn't think was working very well in that first season together. And you've seen the results on the field.
Isn't this the first great quarterback to play in this system? I mean, this system is the one that every offense wants, but every offense that has it, like my Niners, have Jimmy G, who looks exceedingly better off the field than he does playing on it. And that is a problem. Jared Goff, who is a disaster and may not be in LA much longer, but Rodgers is decidedly
elite.
But
this is the first one of those kind of coaches to actually have an elite quarterback.
To get a quarterback handed to him. Yeah. I mean, that you can't, you know, you can't dismiss that fact. No doubt about it.
But I'm just saying like that. That
and it's makes funny
sense.
Because you know how the ongoing, I think you guys are on Twitter, you've definitely seen this narrative of, especially when McVay first got to LA, with Jared Goff, the fact that they break the huddle so quickly so they can get up to the line of scrimmage. So the communication is
so
still
McVay
open
can read
helmet,
the defense,
and he's giving him it's the almost the equivalent to college football where the quarterback comes up to the line of scrimmage and then the entire offense looks to the sideline, right? Well, in Green Bay, you've got the exact opposite. You know, Rodgers can't wait for that communication to go off, and they get to the line of scrimmage, and he takes that play call down almost every single time because he is doing all of that on the field. And I think that is a major kind of boost in the efficiency as far as, okay, I'm going to gather as much information as I can because I am a 16-year vet. I know everything you're ever going to possibly try to do, and I'm going to take advantage of it. And I think that is a big, big part of their success.
It's like the difference between getting an intern and getting someone with 16 years of experience that's a master in the field, right? Like, it'd be the difference between like Eric, like if I got to work on a math project with you versus a high school intern, like it'd be dramatically different. One would fail and one would be a success as we've managed to be successful together. I think that's a perfect characterization. When you were on here last time, you were talking about Aaron said he watched some 2010 tape.
Right.
And he saw something. Now,
practice tape.
Yeah,
practice tape. That's the mind-blowing part.
Okay. So now I've done some research. Rodgers has called you Nags. He's called you nags on a press in a press conference. So like, I expect
you guys are boys now.
I mean, expect that you have love letters, correspondences, some, you know, many things. I want to know, have you figured out what that was, either from listening to him every single day, digging deep, late night conversations, early morning texts?
Yeah, you know, we talk every day, and he really, you know, he reaches out for advice a lot, you know, about the upcoming opponent and how
grooming.
He should attack them. So I will say though, no, there has been no reveal there. He has kept that, and he's been asked about it a few times throughout the year, but he has kept that under wraps. I suspect that will be saved for some memoir or maybe a documentary, but I don't think he's going to give up that ghost anytime
soon. What do you think it is?
I honestly think it's... because he said it was a particular rep and something that he saw with, he wouldn't say specifically his legs, but he has talked about his footwork a lot and marrying the footwork with the, you know, the wide receiver routes, etc. I tend to think it's as simple as he saw himself playing in rhythm in a play where maybe before he had broken the pocket, found, you know, tried to get outside, broke contain and made something happen. We'll probably never know. He'll probably never say, but my hunch is it's something along those lines because, you know, we talked about it this summer. His play in structure, it's A, it's great to watch, but B, it is very un-Rodgers-like as far as, and he's gone further into this than I ever thought. I remember thinking this summer that, okay, I've seen a couple practices and this seems to be happening, but eventually the bullets will be live, so to speak, and we'll see Aaron revert to form. And that has not happened.
He has not had a bad...
I asked him about the check down in this offense. He has embraced the check down in a way he never has in his career, and that has helped the efficiency.
All other players, too, like not just checking down to running backs, but tight ends.
Correct.
He has not had a bad game other than the Tampa game, which
we'll get into here.
You could argue was really a snowball effect of like a couple plays.
No question. Yes.
And
wait till I get my hands on it.
Well, this should be good.
Do you have a take on it, Eric, on what he might have seen? I have one.
I actually think he probably. How long ago was it?
2010.
Okay, so
well, the tape he watched for me, was 2010, this past offseason.
Because for me, to me, the biggest difference in the Packers' offense is how much they value how well Davante Adams gets open in 2.5 seconds or less. To me, that is the cheat code for the Kansas City Chiefs that you saw with Chad Henne at freaking quarterback. That's the cheat code that you saw.
On fourth and one with a game on the line.
Yeah, MJ Stewart should retire after that play. He was like fell down. Like it was like me trying to stop your crossover, George. And then it was
– fair.
And then it was, you know, Stephon Diggs in Buffalo. This entire playoffs are about guys who can win in under 2.5 seconds. And it might not have been 2010. It obviously wasn't Adams because he was a rookie in 14. But it could have been Greg Jennings. It could have been Donald. It could have been Cobb wasn't there yet. But it could have been Greg Jennings. It could have been somebody like that where he's like, it's that guy's job to win.
Could have been Jordy, right?
Yeah, Jordy was kind of a back. He dropped a lot of
passes.
But
Jordy didn't really explode until the 11 in 2010. Right. So 11 was his first big year. But that's a good point in so much that Aaron has talked a lot about how in McCarthy's offense, the big difference to his mind was in that offense, it was very much, okay, we're going to single these guys up as much as we can, and they have to win. Mm-hmm. Whereas with LaFleur, it is very much we're going to scheme them open for the most part. Now, obviously, Adams is a very special case. But for the most part, the big difference is, you know, he has said this, I have to pick a side and hope that somebody on that side wins.
Yeah. Well, and that's great leadership, right? Like leaders that fail are oftentimes the leaders to try to do everything themselves.
They're stubborn.
And the ones that succeed are oftentimes ones that say, like, you might be wasting Adam's career if you turn him into a sort of pocket out of pocket drill guy, right? Like a scramble drill guy.
Yeah.
But if you turn, but he's like,
see, that's Randall Cobb. That's where Randall Cobb shines.
Exactly. So I wonder, because my skepticism about Green Bay this year was 100%. Rodgers, when he was good, had five wide, like James Jones was like their fifth best wide receiver, and he's a great football player. Mm-hmm. Like they were just receivers for days, and then now they're mostly one really brilliant wide receiver and a bunch of guys who are complimentary. And maybe that's what Rodgers figured out, because in that Super Bowl run, Jordy played well, Driver played well, whatever. Finley was hurt. You know, they really were a Greg Jennings offense that year, and maybe that's what he learned. I don't know.
Nagler, did you Nags, actually, as I'm going to call you.
Yeah, Nags, Nags. Please. Yes, thanks.
Did you listen to Davante Adams with Sherman and Chris Collinsworth?
I did. That was phenomenal. Podcast? That was great. And I know there were Packer fans who were nervous that Davante gave away too much on that interview. That I thought was hilarious.
We talked about Adams before, and I should say I've always rooted for him, and I had come around to ranking him appropriately as the best receiver in the NFL. And well, he was so impressive, so impressive talking about his craft. And it makes sense. The meticulous nature with which he talked about the game reminded me of Rodgers. And he said a couple things on there about the way that he runs routes. And to me, that was what I think Rodgers saw, was when he is attuned to the way the guy runs a route, the rhythm can be better. And yes. The way Adams talked about how he runs his routes, thinking about the timing of Aaron's footwork, mm-hmm. I was like, wow. I mean, this is when you have reached, you know, Zen or whatever.
It's a whole nother level. And it's funny because, you know, obviously in this day and age, we're all obsessive about football. We consume everything about it. But so little of what we consume online goes into that level of detail. Mm-hmm. How could it? We're not privy to what they're working on in the practice field. We're not, you know, that's not the kind of window that we get into the process. But when you talk to these guys in the locker room and they talk about that kind of thing, as far as like the real minute detail of their work, that's when, for me, it's like, okay, I'm a hobbyist who has a platform, and I certainly love the game and I want to know as much about it as I can, but I'm never going to be there. Mm-hmm. Those types of things that they're talking about, that's true craftsmanship. And that's what we're watching with, not just with Rodgers and Adams, although they are, you know, the best of the best. It's like all these guys in the NFL who are doing it at a high level, they're doing things that you and I, we're never going to be privy to as far as how they're going about it, their approach. And that, to me, is what makes it so fascinating, is like there's always stuff we're not going to know that we're going to keep learning about as we get to talk to these guys. You get platforms where you get like Adams talking to Richard Sherman, mm-hmm. two guys who play at an insanely high level. That helps reveal the game to us on the outside.
I want to say that when I was at Division II Minnesota State Moorhead, my reach block naturally against outside linebackers in the 3-4 was approaching that kind of.
There's no question. I mean, one of my Pop Warner days, quarterback for the Appleton West Terrors. Let me tell you, man.
I ran a sick level decoy wheel route on the backside of. Chris.
I would like to say the way that I prepared to talk to Aaron Nags, today. Was reaching that level of preparation.
Sure, right.
I noticed that you did not, when I asked you why this team is better, why this team is so good, mm-hmm. AJ Dillon, the engine, was not very high on your list. And I can't really square those two things. Can you explain?
Do you know that draft picks don't happen in a vacuum, and they last longer than 1 year? They sign them to 4-year contracts. Almost like they have plans going forward, and they let guys develop, much like Rashawn Gary, who maybe didn't do a whole lot his first year, but seems to be a pretty important part this year as they're on the doorstep of a championship. So, you know, you and I can talk about that whenever you'd like. I can let you know how the draft works.
Okay.
You know, I know you guys fancy yourselves draft experts.
We'll keep checking back. Look, I hope this is not the.
Please. Did you catch that Titans game?
Oh, I did. I absolutely did. I stopped watching when the game was over, which was after the 15th time that Davante Adams had turned the entire secondary into a pile of garbage in the middle.
Double
of
team? What double team?
I mean, that was route running at the highest order.
I'm waiting for Dillon to get back there. Maybe as like a fullback in like a two-back offense, and they hand it to him as the up-back. They fake the pitch to Jamal Williams. Uh-huh. Dillon runs for 15 yards. I get to tweet out again, the J in AJ stands for January.
Love it.
They sent him on a wheel route this past game. You just wait till Rodgers hits him on that thing.
Have you ever seen a guy with patiently bigger thighs run a wheel route before in my life?
I love it. Well, yeah, probably Danny Vitale a couple years ago, but that's about it.
We'll keep circling back on it. You know, maybe at some point the pandemic will end.
When they let Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams walk and AJ is the workhorse, just get back.
Do you think they're letting Aaron Jones walk?
I can't imagine that they sign him back. I know Rob Domofsky had something on one of his, you know, ESPN pieces recently about how the Packers had offered top five money. Now that's average per year. Right, obviously, right. The guarantees that are the real kind of thing that guys want weren't there. And that was what precipitated the hiring of Drew Rosenhaus.
Right.
Not surprised at any of that. We've known those two sides have been talking since the combine last year. That's how long these, you know, talks have been going on.
RIP, by the way.
RIP. Man.
Sucks.
Poor one out for the combine.
We have to come up with some sort of like event that we all get to go to.
1,000%. Yeah, I mean, look, the Super Bowl. I'll get to that at the end. I have an idea, but let's talk about this game here. Let's start it this way, because we talked to Sherman about this, what he thinks of that Week 7 game or Week 6 game.
Right.
Is there anything about that Week 6 game where you go, that mattered and will matter on Sunday?
Yeah, the way Todd Bowles did an excellent job of breaking down their protections. And I know a lot of people point to David Bakhtiari going out in that game, but the trouble was starting before Bakhtiari went out. Some of that is play calling. Some of that is situational. But he did a really good job of taking advantage of, you talked about their offensive line being solid and doing a really good job, and they have done that. And they've been great against the blitz all year. But Todd Bowles is a different animal.
Yeah.
And he did a really good job of taking advantage of them, not only by stunts and games up front with his line, but also utilizing secondary pressure. Mm-hmm. And I think that not just the offensive line, I'm talking tight ends, the backs. You saw Jamal Williams get beat on a blitz. That never happens. You know, I just think they put enough doubt in the minds of the protection unit to really cause some problems. Now, on top of that, I think there was when you talk about the play calling, you also mentioned the snowball effect. The Packers got behind, and all of a sudden, they're calling these shot plays. They're calling these 10, 15-yard routes. And you go back and you watch it, and you're like, guys, it's 14-10.
Mm-hmm.
Just calm down, run the football, play your game. But for whatever reason, it really seemed to spook both LaFleur and Rodgers.
The
snowball definitely happened.
Have they been significant? I know the Indy game, they were ahead and came back after that deep shot after all those holding penalties.
Right.
But like the Bears game, the first game, I mean, they've basically been, they've played from ahead ever since the Indy game.
Almost. I mean,
it's the Jacksonville game, they got behind a little bit, but you know, that was fine. San Francisco, the league might want to like have that game back, by the way. The Vikings game.
I would like to have that game back.
The Vikings game was one that was such a weird game, right? Because no team.
Because there were literally four possessions in the first half of that game.
That was
each
weird.
Each team possessed it twice, each team scored twice. So it was 14 all going in. And then the second half, it just unraveled.
So the Packers really haven't, other than this Tampa game and maybe the Jacksonville game, played from substantially behind yet.
The only other time it's happened is in Week 2 against Detroit. They fell behind 14-3.
That's
the
right.
Of that game, and then they absolutely destroyed.
They got
the Lions are.
That has
to
been, but that
that's
is
why they
a
hired
real
Dan
thing.
Campbell.
That has been their MO all year long, and especially here in this last kind of month plus stretch, they get ahead. They get two or three scores ahead. And I'm not going to say they coast, but the game's in hand.
Yeah.
You know, teams may march down and score another touchdown and keep it some questionable or whatever. We saw the Rams come within a score, but it never feels like they're in trouble.
The Eagles within a touchdown, and then the Aaron Jones run. The Lions backdoor covered that game. Carolina backdoor covered that game. That was kind of a weird – they didn't play well in Carolina.
It was a weird game.
But then – this is the question I have. If they get behind in a game like this –
Yes,
because this is a very
it's a major test.
A characteristic of these kind of offenses: the Niners offense, the Titans offense, the Packers offense, the Vikings offense too. All these offenses where you prefer to play at less than 11 personnel sometimes.
Right.
What Rodgers obviously is the difference maker because he's an elite quarterback, but how. That's really the test. That's the game script we have. And it's sort of similar with Lamar last year. Never saw Lamar in a game script where he was behind, and then Tennessee gets up 14, and we're all surprised, and it's like, well, we don't have any data on this.
So right.
That's the one question mark I have. That being said, Tampa on defense does a really good job of blitzing, but that opens up big plays, and big plays are the way you come back as well.
Exactly. And, you know, if we know one thing about Bowles is it doesn't matter what the score is.
Right.
He's going to call pressure.
Yeah.
It's in his blood. He always does it. He never – there's not a down and distance that's been invented Todd Bowles isn't going to dial up a blitz. So you're right about that. There are places they can take advantage, but they didn't do a very good job of it last time around.
They also went up 10-0 in that game. And yes, I remember watching the first possession.
With the ball.
I remember watching the first possession and going, oh boy. Adams is open on every single play. Rodgers has not held onto the ball for longer than 2 seconds this entire drive. This shit is over. And then it stopped. And Adam said this too, and I wonder if you've heard this from either Aaron or anyone else talking about it, but he was like, we really weren't prepared for what Todd Bowles threw at us. Like, our game plan was to go down the field, and we didn't have an adjustment. Do you see evidence, or have you heard from, say, Rodgers or anyone else, that that is a cognizant thought process now going into this next game?
I haven't heard anything about this upcoming match, and it's been pretty locked down. But I will say it was very apparent. And the thing, like I was just talking about, as far as so many kind of long developing, you know, concepts that have guys going 15 yards down the field in cut. Okay, that's all well and good, but Rodgers is already running for his life, if not on the ground at that point. And that has been, if there's something you want to, a nit you want to pick with LaFleur, that has kind of been constant. When they lose big. And when that snowball happens, whether it was the 49ers twice last year, that Chargers game last year, you know, this Tampa Bay game this season, that has been an issue where if they all of a sudden find themselves a couple scores behind, things really do seem to kind of get stuck in neutral, and they have a real kind of issue and or problem getting out of it. And you can point to the play calling, you can point to Rodgers, what have you, but that has been a bugaboo, if you will, for this team. Here's no question.
I will say, though, as somebody who has backed the truck up for the Packers this week as far as the betting perspective, my comfort is in the fact that Bruce Arians will not dagger a team. If you get behind to the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Bucks get a fourth down, you might as well send Allen Rossum back there, whoever the punt returner
was. Allen Rossum. Back in the day. I wish they had Allen
Rossum
at this point.
That is great.
Phenomenal. There's no Arians is this is the biggest coaching mismatch we'll see in the entire playoffs. I like Arians as a guy. He seems like a great motivator of people and everything. Right. But in the game, the guy steps on his own.
I have never been more frustrated because I bet on the Bucks last week and I had the Bucks money line as the final leg in a couple of different parlays. I had a lot of money riding on it. And so I'm sitting here going, I have Tom Brady, who's played as well as any quarterback this side of Aaron Rodgers this season, against Drew Brees, who can barely throw the football
five yards down the field.
Yeah. So I'm like, I've got this in the bag, right? And fucking Bruce Arians comes out here and goes, oh, yeah? Watch me run Leonard Fournette nowhere
well,
on every
that
first
too,
down.
Right? And that's the one thing where you guys have talked about Pettin. I actually think Pettin's better than most of the Twitter Cognoscia does, but like...
He is. There's no doubt. His public perception is very different than his actual kind of competence.
With all the teams left in the playoffs, the question is, except for Tampa. Tampa actually tries to stop the run. That is a focus of their team.
Right.
The Bills, the Chiefs, and the Packers all are teams where I think they're smart enough where you can make the assumption that they could stop the run if they wanted to. Right? The Bills did it against...
Maybe this team could. Well, they certainly couldn't last year.
Yeah.
But this year, they've done them. And especially here in the stretch, whether it's been Derrick Henry, whether it's been David Montgomery, whether it's been Akers last week, they've done a good job. They've played so much better up front than they did earlier in this season. And I'm with you. I think Pettin is smart. You know, his quip that he had for us, was it last year, where he said, you know, it's faster to fly to Miami than to walk there. And the whole idea about, okay, you're going to get some yardage on the ground. That is going to happen. But we are going to protect. And this is where the frustration with Pettin comes in, is that he's so married to this idea. And I think because when he first got to Green Bay, they were killed deep so often. He has made it his mission where we are not going to get beat deep on big plays. It is just not going to happen. If that means we give up three consecutive third downs on third short, I'm fine with it. We're going to get him to the red zone. We're going to clamp down. Now, early in the year, that was not happening. But now, that is very much their MO. You can drive, maybe you'll get a touchdown, but more likely you're going to have to settle for a field goal. And when Aaron Rodgers is on the other side,
I'm going to win. It's a winning strategy
for
all these teams that have great quarterbacks.
If you have a quarterback advantage, and especially when you have one this large, you want to force that situation to be the deciding factor. And that's how you do it. Now, the point about big plays is very apt because Jaire Alexander, Jaire Island, as it has now become, the number one graded cornerback at PFF this year, has his bugaboo was giving up big plays. Yeah. He was a big play guy. He either made a big play or he gave up a big play.
Teams were really smart last year, especially early on, targeting his aggressiveness.
Yes.
You saw Dallas do it. You saw San Francisco do it. And he has completely wiped that from his game.
And has become one of the three, four best corners in the league, which is a huge addition to have. The way that that frees up your defensive play caller to use other players in their best position is huge. And I think that's why the defense, I have confidence, will not, you know, get shredded, right? Which is the one thing that worries you. So my question is this then. If you're saying, okay, here's my biggest worry, maybe it's a matchup, you know, maybe it's, because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to convince myself to hedge in some way, right? I'm trying to convince myself, okay, what do the Bucks have? Because they have Brady. Arians is going to neuter him in all likelihood. What is the matchup or thing that worries you most?
You know, it is the Brady thing, because as much as you can talk about Arians and what have you in this offense, I think they're smart to run things through the ground game. I think Fournette and Jones, you're talking about a 43-year-old dude there pulling the trigger. Like, I get why you have misgivings for it, but
you
I will say
Fournette,
this.
43?
You go back and you watch that matchup in week six, and Brady does such an excellent job pre-snap. That, to me, is the biggest kind of issue here for the Packers, in that they've played really well against the Ryan Tannehills, who he's had a really good couple years here, no doubt about it. He is not Brady. Against Mitch Trubisky, Jared Goff, what have you. It's all well and good to set your whatever your call is and pre-snap. Maybe Goff is getting something in his ear from McVay, etc. It's a whole nother world to have Brady come up to the line of scrimmage, look at you pre-snap, make his adjustments, and get guys into position to take advantage. And we saw that a few times in week six, especially with Gronk, who up until that point had done absolutely nothing this season. And then all of a sudden, Gronk came to life. Mm-hmm. And a large part of that was Brady making adjustments at the line of scrimmage and telling Gronk, go run this route that you and I have, you know, taken advantage of teams with for 12 years. So to me, that Pettine, his recent history against Brady is not great.
Yep.
That is the big concern if you're the Packers.
And I wonder if one of the big reasons that I was like, okay, the Packers are a great play here. I got them at 3 early on, -3, it's now 3.5, was okay.
Oh, good for you, by the way.
Thank you.
What a score.
The Tampa Bay Bucs ran the ball 30 of 51 times on first and second down against the Saints. Now, I take that for what it's worth, not try to read too much into it and go, okay, well, they're going to try and do that again because they won the game. But galaxy brain me, Mags, galaxy brain me goes, you're setting up a Brady comes out and chucks it all over the field game in the snow, where Brady is smart enough to go, look, when it snows, let's get my receivers against defensive backs in an opportunity for them to win, and I will throw it accurately.
Now, and get George, the guys who know where they're going against the guys who don't know where they're going. I'm here, man. George, I'm with you. I think that it absolutely sets up for that. We'll see if they actually try to utilize that aspect of the game. I still think they're going to run the hell out of Fournette and Jones.
We're ushering in. So today is a big day for a lot of people. We've spent 4 years wondering if there was something deep. We spent 4 years wondering if there was something deeper in a lot of these situations, when in reality the answer is no. And I look at the Tampa Bay offense, and instead of wondering if there's something deeper, something underneath it all, Occam's razor would say no. Like,
by the way, I'm flying to D.C. this afternoon.
Matt, my co-founder is in D.C. as we speak.
Really?
So, Godspeed.
Have you seen pictures of it yet?
Oh, yeah.
Because I am really, my girlfriend lives there, and she has told me, like, prepare for a movie set.
Yeah. Like, it looks kind of otherworldly.
I'm very excited. I'm also very excited to be Arab in an airport and feel free as a bird. I'm going to walk through security. I'm going to dance through security. I don't have like authentic Arab garb, but I might try and find some and wear it there.
Say, go like, and purchase some.
Yeah.
That sort of reminds me of the second Harold and Kumar movie where he like riffs on the TSA guy for
We've reached the top of the mountain here. I have some quick hitters to get you out of here on. Okay.
Let's do it.
Kansas City Buffalo is the other game. Who are you
rooting? There's another game.
Yeah. Who are you rooting for?
It got to be Buffalo, right? I mean, I love Andy Reid. He's one of my favorite people in the NFL. Former Packers coach. I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for him. But aren't we sick of Kansas City already?
No!
Aren't we?
Are you scared?
You know, no, I'm not scared. Would I love a rematch of Super Bowl I? No question about it. It'd be great, especially with a former Packers coach. A
lot of Packers fans in Kansas City. That's their like.
And I love Kansas City. I love the vibe. But come on, the Bills in the Super Bowl. Chris Rock literally has a joke about that. That's like 15 years old.
Do you want to be a real
Bills in the Super Bowl against the Packers? These two small town cold weather teams. Come on.
I could see that. But do you want to be the reason the Bills are 0-5 in the Super Bowl?
1,000% yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
no question.
The question then, though, is do we have to put an asterisk next to the Packers Super Bowl if they get lucky to play the Bills instead of, you know, Mahomes is 100%.
No, I thought you were going to go, like, because it's been a COVID season and so many people opted out and who knows what the season might have been if everyone had played, blah, blah, blah. I've already heard that.
Actually, I've heard
it.
We apologize for nothing.
There is zero asterisk, well, not just because I think the Chiefs will win, but, like, there's zero asterisk to the season. You had a way, there was a way to prepare for the season that made it positive EV, and all the teams who are in it are teams that we said had a good chance because they made one big bet. You make one big bet on your quarterback. And Buffalo, it was a sketchy ass bet, but they made it and it turned over.
I mean, talk about rolling the dice and coming up sixes.
Yeah.
What a great season.
Kansas City, 20 of 22 starters returning. Green Bay, very similar. We all talked at the beginning of the year, the Vikings, 15 draft picks, good draft. Packers, dog shit draft. And it wasn't going to matter this year because, as you said, the draft for the Packers was about subsequent years. They played for this year. And Tampa Bay is the biggest play for this year team we've ever seen.
The Ring Chasers Brigade. Come on. You know, talk about a team with no history, with no depth, with no life, with no vitality. I mean, these are owned by the Glazers. I mean, who wants to see the Glazers happy? Nobody. Come on. This is a team that Tom Brady went and got paid. They wanted to sell some seat licenses. All these guys were like, oh, I'm going to go play with the GOAT. There's no soul to this team. I can't wait to pound them into the snow.
I kind of agree with you. Okay, so on that note, if it is Chiefs-Packers, we have a Packer and a Chief. Are you going to try and go? You've got to try and go.
No. Corey and I have talked about it a lot. No, I mean, all the availabilities are going to be done via, virtually anyway. Right. There's not going to be, I mean, the events will obviously be scaled way back. And look, we've done watch parties for every single game this year because of the pandemic. So it would seem, we were talking about me going to the championship game. Corey is going. I was going to go in the press box. But, you know, if you've done watch parties for every single game, in a season where you're almost in the Super Bowl, you got to keep doing watch parties. So well, I'm going to be in our studio here in New York.
Not only that, but like I also think that this season is a special one for a lot of fans. And you know,
it's about the fans.
We've done our fair share of like watch-alongs and live shows and things that people become a part of. Not the family, but like people become part
community.
Of this.
You're fostering community, and that's what
experience
in a weird way has been so great about the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, of course, you wish it wouldn't have happened, but man, I tell you what, we have like met people because of this thing. Who every Sunday, we all gather around and watch the Packers. Now it's virtual, but it really feels like a community.
Well, it speaks a lot. I think it's tremendous that, you know, despite like obviously your platform and your privilege and all that, like again, you've built this community and, you know, you are going to be a part of that community even in the biggest stage. I think that that's a fairly cool thing, and the same thing for us as well.
Yeah, what I'm trying to get at though is if it's Chiefs Packers, we need a little skin on this game. There needs to be some sort of
I 1,000% agree.
Okay.
But let's get there first.
I agree.
You know,
so
there's a game to be played.
Here's what I propose. After the game, after the games on Sunday, Eric and I will be going live on this set. And I thought, you know, let's have you call in for 5 minutes, maybe have a beer.
I'm all in.
Multiple drinks.
Win or lose, I'll show up. That's fine
by me.
Win
or lose. And we'll just have some fun because you're one of our favorite guests, which is really despite the odds, honestly.
Can I put that on a poster?
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah. Not a fraudulent guest. He lives up to it every time, even when the Packers
one of their favorite guests.
There you go. But I might send you a plaque.
If the Packers and the Packers make the Super Bowl, I will try my best to send you some new Glarus. How's that?
That's what I'm talking about. Now we're talking. All right. It took us what, an hour, but we're there. Now we're talking brass tacks.
We're thinking. Okay, we'll keep thinking on that. I have a couple more questions. Rodgers wins this Super Bowl. What else does he need to do to surpass Tom Brady as the GOAT?
Not a thing. He's already better than Tom Brady. We all know this. Everyone knows. At the height of his powers, he's better than Tom Brady. Tom Brady was put in a great situation in New England with the greatest modern coach. Obviously, the two worked so well in tandem together. But please, you put Aaron Rodgers on that Patriots team, it's a wrap for the entire league every single year.
So even if Brady wins this one against Rodgers in Lambeau.
I mean, it depends the manner in which. Is it like last week where the Packers turned the ball over four times and gift them field position?
A win is a win. 1-0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean,
yeah.
If they turn the ball over four times, that's probably on Rodgers, to be fair.
The only team that can turn the ball over four times this weekend and win is Kansas City.
This is what I'm dealing with, Aaron.
Aaron, I don't know if I agree with your police work there.
So I talked about this on the last podcast. As I was watching Tampa Bay freaking out because they were shitting themselves running the ball every time, Eric is on the phone with his buddy in Kansas City having the most homer conversation of all time. Like, you can't call helmet to helmet. He's a moving target. You know, there's something sacred about the end zone.
Oh my God.
You know,
flush just, that right down the toilet.
It was incredible. And it made me think about, you know, what makes Super Bowl or what makes NFL fandom so great is that you can be as nuanced as you want. And it all boils down to, like, you just love to watch your team win. Yep. And that's the situation we're in now. Last question for you.
Yeah.
Best quarterback receiver duo of all time. Rodgers and Adams are so on point this year. I'm thinking of some others. There's Brady Gronk, who we're seeing in this game. Mm-hmm. There's maybe you could put Brady and Moss for that season. Mm-hmm. You've got Rodgers and Nelson were an incredible duo.
No doubt.
There's the Montana Young and Jerry Rice trio, if you will.
Favre, Sterling, Sharp.
Got to put them in there. That's where I was going to go.
Yeah.
Favre and Sharp is the greatest I ever saw.
Really?
No question.
And where?
No doubt about it.
Where are Rodgers and Adams? Because they've been fucking amazing.
They're right underneath it. Like, to me. I mean, look, they're on another level in the sense of just having a mind meld, right? Mm. Like, Favre forced the ball to Sharp, and it worked. Rodgers doesn't force the ball to anybody for the most part, and Adams just gets open. But to me, it was a very different environment that Favre and Sharp were doing it in defensively, where guys were allowed to absolutely decimate you over the middle, where guys were allowed to basically cling to you for dear life down the field. None of that is allowed now against Devontae. Now, good luck getting your hands on Devontae in the first place, but even if you do, once you get past 5 yards, you got to let go. Back in the day, that didn't happen a whole lot. So, yeah, I mean, Sharp was just a man among boys, and if he hadn't gotten hurt, we'd be talking about him in the same breath as Jerry Rice.
He set the NFL record for catches in a season twice.
Yeah.
He was great.
What are you putting – so let's talk about Brady Gronk because they're in this game. Impartial, Eric, would you put Adams Rodgers ahead of that duo at its height, at its peak? You know, because obviously
Pete Gronk is legit a top 10 player in NFL history.
I mean, almost unguardable, I'd say. Yeah. I mean, how many games did you see where they split Gronk out teams would literally have two guys just go over there to try and
stop exciting thing about Adams, the exciting thing about Adams Favre, or sorry, Adams Rodgers is it's probably not over, right? You're still seeing possibly.
You got at least one more year, at least one more.
The ascension. Yeah.
You're a history buff. Where are you putting, you know, Rice and either Montana or Young?
Well, that's the tricky part is Steve Young actually had a better statistical career than Joe Montana did. Yeah. So then which one is – it's hard to choose which one's the best because I don't know how much
– Yeah, do you make it Walsh Rice? Because, a lot of that is about the system they're playing in. Obviously, Rice is amazing and the GOAT receiver, et cetera, unless you want to talk real and talk about Don Hutson. But – you know, you look at Rice and he did it whoever was back there. Yeah.
Well, you tweeted about this person – the George Seifert thing too, like LaFleur is having a first 2 years of his career like that would make George Seifert blush. The Walsh thing is interesting because the first Seifert Super Bowl was basically a fuck you to Walsh because he was kind of a tyrant, and they won. They like you know, their Super Bowl in 88 was kind of fluky. They were 10-6, you know, needed a tiebreaker even to get in the playoffs and then won. And then in 1989, they were 14-2 and won the Super Bowl like 55-10 or something weird. So, yeah. Like, it's weird. The Niners thing is weird because the ecosystem's so much better than the individual people. Fair. Whereas I think Green Bay is actually, as much as we love LaFleur, as much as we like the defense and all that stuff.
It's about Rodgers and Adams. Yeah.
Correct.
Like, there's zero question.
Correct. And it was back with Holmgren, too, with Favre and Sharp.
No doubt. Well, and it's funny because Favre was so dialed into Sharp at that point. When Sharp got hurt, it forced Brett to start spreading the ball around the way Holmgren wanted him to. Like, they obviously schemed up Sharp and got him open a lot, but Favre forced it in there no matter what. Like, if the guy's covered, I don't care.
Favre
still forced it in there.
Favre was close to getting benched a couple times in his career for ineffective play. It was 1995 when they finally, when post Sterling Sharp, when Robert Brooks and Andre Rison and like those guys came in, and it was like he learned how to be a quarterback, and then he was deadly. And then
he won three MVPs.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Aaron Nagler, you're the best. Score prediction.
Oh, boy. I think it's going to be a closer game than probably Packers fans are hoping for, but give me the Packers 27-24.
Fuck, that's on
it's
three.
It's a push.
Fuck.
All right. Well, okay. I get my money back at least.
Yeah, I guess. Aaron Nagler, Cheesehead TV.
Thanks,
Nags.
Aaron.
Love you, brother. Aaron's the best. He's just awesome. So we thank him for joining, and he's going to come on the post game with us.
Assuming faculty is
assuming he can work a phone. But that is a good reminder, we are going to go live again this week right after the games. That'll be our Sunday night. We'll talk obviously about those games. We'll look ahead to the Super Bowl matchup. I can't wait, man. I really can't.
Same.
So hopefully you can control your nerves until then.
I will be a mess.
Okay. Come join us and watch post mess. Eric, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you guys on Sunday.